Hi.
Hi.
It's episode 177 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, trying to figure out where the Brotherhoods end.
And I'm your other host, Mike. And I think it's going to be frustrating playing blue in Commander going forward because of people playing with Arcane Proxy. But as Commander players, it's our responsibility to tell our respective pods about any proxies we are playing.
Please listen carefully.
This is the podcast about Commander,
our favorite Magic the Gathering format, and today we are bringing you Brothers War. We're going to talk about some impactful cards that we're going to be putting in some of our Commander decks, some new Commanders that we want to build, and some combos from CommanderSpellbook.com.
And we got some cards for Jumpstart.
Yeah.
Brothers War Jumpstart. So five new cards coming out in this set. There are 10 themes in the Brothers War. Each one is defined as white infantry, blue power stones, black is unearth, red is welded, and then green is titanic. And there's like two different versions of each that have like maybe just a slight variance.
Mm-hmm.
But there are five new cool cards. None of these are going to be really talked about too much this week, but if you're interested, we wanted to cover them.
Yeah.
So the white one is Rescue Retriever, a 3/3 dog soldier for 3 white. It has flash. Love that. When it enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on each other soldier you control. It's a dog soldier. It is so cute. And then it says prevent all damage that would be dealt to other attacking soldiers you control. So it's a combat trick for soldier decks that are playing white. I love it.
It's a good boy.
I don't have a soldier deck. I don't know if there is a soldier deck that I'd want to build, but it's really cool for the theme. It's a dog soldier.
Yeah, this is one of those soldier cards that accidentally goes well with Abdul Adrian in this set, and it's okay for Abdul. It's not one of the peak ones, but it's
sure.
Pretty good. And for all you rock lovers out there, we have Geology Enthusiast. Some mono blue human artificer for 3 blue. You get a 2/5. This is at the beginning of your end step. Create a tapped power stone token. Then you can pay 6 generic mana to draw a card and put a +1/+1 counter on Geology Enthusiast. So really good mana sink if you have all that mana and it makes power stone.
I'd have taken an earth class science or
earth science class. Yeah.
I'd have taken earth class science.
Okay.
Earth science class in college, and we had to travel to Canada to go look at rocks in Michigan, where we have like a lot of rocks.
Yeah, that's true. There's like, rocks a lot of places
all over. We got it all, and we got Petoskey stones.
Mm-hmm. So why'd you have to go to Canada?
Because I don't know.
Oh, okay.
And when you signed up for the class, it didn't even tell you you needed a passport, which I had one, but that was crazy.
You could maybe you could have had like just an enhanced license back then.
So I did when I was in, back in the day.
Back in the day.
When we only needed the enhanced license to go across the border here in Michigan. I'm not a geology enthusiast myself, but it was pretty, the waterfall we went to.
We do have a geologist in our Discord.
We do.
Yeah. So I hope, Mr. Beardley, that you're excited for this geology enthusiast.
Yes. Next is Terror Ballista, a 7 mana 5/3 construct with menace that says when it attacks, you may sack another creature. When you do, destroy target creature and opponent controls, and has Unearth for 3 black, which is cool. Unearth is coming back, and I like seeing Unearth. Not a mechanic that I originally wanted to build around, but it's very cool. It reminds me of flashback in a sense, and I like cards that have things to do once I've already used them up once.
Yeah, I like this. This is also within the mono black commander identity. In case you want to upgrade your Necron Unearth artifact creatures deck, it fits in really, really well.
Easy peasy.
It also looks like Siege Turtle if you're a Yu-Gi-Oh fan out there, and that is infinite flavor points right there. We have Artificer's Dragon as the next card here. It's a 6 generic mana artifact creature dragon with flying and a couple of abilities. It's a 4/4. The abilities are pay 1 red and artifact creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn.
So artifact fire breathing.
For all of your artifact
creatures.
This is really, really good. And then it also has Unearth for 3 red.
Yeah.
So come back with haste, pump all your creatures for one last big go and go to town.
Yeah, and then finally, Woodcaller Automaton. It has a new mechanic that we will be talking about, Prototype, but it's a 10-mana 8/8 with Prototype for 2 green. It says when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, untap target land you control. It becomes a tree folk creature with haste and base power and toughness equal to Woodcaller Automaton's power and toughness. It's still a land. I like seeing that there aren't a ton of legendary creatures in Jumpstart. I do like that when occasionally there's like a chase. Chase card. I didn't look through every single potential rare that you could get in here, but I'm a big fan of Jumpstart. I didn't purchase this, but I do like Jumpstart.
It's just other than these cards, it's the rares from Brothers War. So just in the normal set.
Just in the normal set.
Get in Jumpstart at the rare spot here. So some cool cards. I don't think we're going to have that same thing when we get to the new Jumpstart standalone product.
The actual Jumpstart.
That one I think is going to have a lot of legendary.
Maybe it'll have another Allosaur Shepherd or a Tiny Bones or... Always pull the elf pack. You just want the elf pack because you're going to get a crater hoof or an Allosaur Shepherd. That was the best pack. You open it, you're like, it says elves. Please be a good one.
Yes. Well, except there wasn't a bad one, right? It was like you either got one or the other for elves.
I think there were three options.
Oh, was there like the elvish arc druid or something?
There's that, but that one's still good. You can still at least win games. That's true. Pack, so, but I can't remember. It's been a minute, but okay. I did open quite a few of those packs. I like that. But we want to thank some people. We have to. That's the rules. You have to thank everyone every single week. And we really appreciate all of you for listening to us week after week after week. And especially all of our patrons. Thank you so much for being here and for chatting with us and hanging out with us in Discord. We love our group. And if you are looking for some stuff to be sent to you, we have a lot of free junk we want to send out that I say junk, but I actually really like it. Like our little buttons.
Yeah.
And I want some stickers soon. Mm-hmm. We've got play maps. We've got dry erase tokens. Mm-hmm. Potentially looking at fanny packs. And we did get a comment saying, I actually am interested in fanny packs.
Yes.
So if you are looking for any of that cool swag and you would like to just support us, or you just want to hang out with us in our Discord as well, it does not require Patreon support to jump into our Discord, but we have a cool channel for all of our patrons. So if you want to head over there, you can head to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate for any dollar amount.
And if you're looking for another way or an additional way to support the podcast, whatever you're currently listening to, if you could subscribe, rate, review, leave comments and follow. We'd really appreciate it. You can also find us anywhere on the internet. And I do mean anywhere with an asterisk. You can search us on Google. You'll find us on YouTube. You'll find us on Instagram. You'll find us on Twitter. You'll find our website. And you can even email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com.
Let's go check out what's going on with the war. All right, so the Brothers War is an event set, just like War of the Spark was. And okay. I really like the event set because it's not like a whole new story. We know what's happening. And this is also an old story,
yes,
but kind of new.
I like it things like retold.
Happening. Like a retold story. So it's not new, but we're following planeswalkers who are traveling to one of Dominaria's key moments. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the mechanics of the set. We have one new mechanic here, prototype. It's a new keyword that has an alternative cost on artifacts and artifact creatures. Each of them has a default mana cost, power, and toughness. But there's an alternative cost that can be paid that gives you a smaller and more affordable card, hence the type, you know, the term prototype, that keeps the same abilities, but just has smaller power and toughness. So Steel Seraph is an example. It's a 6/6 artifact creature angel. It's a 5/4 with flying that says at the beginning of your upkeep, at the beginning of combat on your turn, target creature you control gains your choice of flying, vigilance, or lifelink until end of turn. 6 mana is a lot. Maybe you want to do it sooner. You can get a prototype of this creature for 1 white. So the prototype has a color. And then it's just the 3/3 that has flying, and it keeps the, at the beginning of combat on your turn, a creature gets flying, vigilance, or lifelink. So it's just an, I want it smaller. I want it sooner.
I think it's a really cool mechanic.
I do too.
Very interesting way of having high mana value cards in your deck that you can cast for cheaper. Maybe there's some like Eureka things going on here.
Yep.
I know people are talking about blinking a lot of these things, casting it for the prototype cost, blinking it so they get it for the big power and toughness. You will see a lot of examples of these cards that say you get an extra effect if you were to cast it.
Yes.
So keep that in mind. Our example is not one of those. It's actually a really, really good one that I really like, and it's in white. You can play it with Ephemerate. And
it was funny. I was looking for an example. Example to use, and I was like, I just like this one. One's just very good.
It's in Ephemerate colors, and I think that's why I like it the most.
Yeah,
and that's the only reason. But we also have some returning mechanics, a mechanic that I don't think anyone saw coming.
No.
In this one, this is Meld. So we have three new Meld pairings in this one. It's a keyword that actually has you combine two different cards. You combine them into one oversized card, two times the size of a card. So on the backside of these cards, you'll see each one of them is actually half of a giant card. We previously saw this on Gisela and Bruna, along with a couple other pairings in the Innistrad block in the 2000.
It was Shadows over Innistrad Block, yeah. So second time, and I would say, yeah, Brizella, the Giselle and Bruno was probably the most popular.
Yeah,
definitely. From what we've seen, I mean, there was Anwa Garrison, there was another one before as well, but the only one that anybody ever sees flipped is the mm-hmm. Angels, because they're just very good.
Yeah, everyone plays the land with the red activatable ability, but not the swarm of rats that it combines with.
I play the Garrison. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
There's a human that it combines with, and they become like an unruly mob or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Anwar Garrison is the creature version that makes the red humans, and it melts with Anwar Battlements that can give a creature haste, and it turns into a 7/4 Eldrazi Ooze writhing township.
Hey, if you've melded things other than Gisela and Bruna, take a picture and send it to us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com.
The winner, though, if you meld, though, you're the winner. You automatically it's so cool.
win. But we are getting three new meld combinations here in Brothers War. We are getting an Urza meld, which is a planeswalker, a Mishra meld, which is a Phyrexian lord man awesomeness, and then there's Titania, who turns into a giant tree.
Giant,
amazing.
I like Titania the most because it just works with the land. And the land's also just very good.
That's true.
I like that card a lot.
Yeah, Titania probably has the most value in the two individual pieces.
And maybe. Titania works really well just in generic decks that care about throwing stuff in your graveyard. Titania and that land, top notch.
It's also the one that's monocolored, so that probably has a big advantage too.
But hey.
It's better.
I like single and two color decks. Mono and two color decks. It's kind of my thing right now. And then Unearth is the final returning mechanic. It's another, this has a cost on cards that lets you return the card from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gives it haste. Then you exile at the beginning of the next end step. Or really, if it would leave the battlefield at all and you can only activate this at sorcery speed. Do you run Unearth a lot?
No. But I have a Cedrus.
You have a Cedrus. Yeah, you have a Cedrus, which gives Unearth.
Yeah, so nothing in there actually has Unearth itself. Only Cedrus is granting Unearth. That's cool. Things. But I mean, Unearth is a kind of cool mechanic. There's a new card that has it when things leave your battlefield. If it had Unearth, you exile it first and then put it back in your hand. So there are some new Unearth mechanics that are coming out. Obviously, the Necron precon that we had a lot of Unearth mechanics. So I think Unearth is a mechanic that we're going to continue seeing a lot of support, but no, it's not something I play with a lot. Do you play with it in any of your graveyard decks or anything?
I don't, but I like cards like that have use once I've used them up once, or discard them or mill them or whatever, just flashback or whatever. Cards that have a second use.
Yeah, and it's Unearth is an activated ability, not casting it, so it gets around some counterspell stuff, which is pretty cool. But speaking of those meld cards that we talked about a second ago, Urza is getting its first Eternal Legal Planeswalker in this one.
Yeah,
the cool. Melded together Urza Planeswalker, which has five activated abilities and a passive ability.
Yeah, it's a lot. But you know what? I appreciate it because you had to do all the work to get it out. So first Eternal Legal, which I didn't realize until today.
Yeah, because it had the legendary creature from Modern Horizons and then the...
The uncard. The uncard. Yeah. This set also gives us the Transformers cards and the retro artifacts that are coming out with the special serialized schematic versions of the artifacts. The serialized versions are only in collector's boosters specifically, but you can get the Transformers cards and the retro artifacts in other various products.
If you want the Transformers in their shattered glass, like alternate universe version where the Decepticons are the
Autobots
and vice versa, those are also only in collector's edition at the same rarity as those Heitsugus were Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. Yes, and I based that off of a couple of YouTube videos I watched, not off an article or anything, so you can double check me on that one.
Okay. That so we have zero proof, but we think that they are so rare you won't get them.
I've only ever seen them open in a collector's edition video so far. And from what I've listened to in these videos, as long as these people are knowledgeable and accurate with their information, you should only be able to get them.
Interesting. See, they're very rare.
Yes, very, very rare. And while we don't usually talk about reprints, there are two cards that are getting reprints that are really, really good for us commander players, Fauna Shaman and Diabolic Intent.
Yes.
Two great tutors for what you want to do in commander in mono green and mono black, respectively. Diabolic Intent, I think the last time was printed in Battle Bond. I had a foil copy. I sold it like a month ago, and I'm really glad I did.
Yeah. They were, for regular versions, these were like $12 and $30. So right now the price at pre-order is lower, which is great, but they're gonna go up. They're wildly playable.
Oh, yeah.
Tutors in Commander. So if you don't have them, the new artwork on Fauna Shaman, top tier. Mm-hmm. I like both the Diabolic Intent arts. I like them both.
I prefer the Battle Bond one, but this one is going to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, and you know what? I love things that are cheap.
That's right.
I love them. I love them cheap. So let's talk about some useful cards for the set. I'm going to do my three first, and then Michael do his 3 seconds.
Okay, sure.
So the first one here is Tokasia's Welcome. So this card is an enchantment for 2 and a white. It says, whenever one or more creatures with mana value 3 or less enter the battlefield under your control, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. So this is really another fantastic welcoming vampire or mentor of the meek ability. Mm-hmm. And I'm here for it because those are some of my favorite cards to be able to get mana advantage. And specifically, this one doesn't make me pay extra for it.
That's true. Which so it's not mentor.
Which is why it's not mentor. Mm-hmm. So I did some research on this.
Yeah, I see your stats here. I'm so glad you did this.
Yeah, so the total number of creatures with mana value less than 3 that would work with Tokasia's Welcome is 6,543.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
And then the total number of creatures with power less than or equal to 2, not including tokens, because you can make a bunch of tokens. This doesn't include tokens. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That work with Welcoming Vampire and Mentor of the Meek is 7,428. So you're not even off by a whole 1,000. It's only off by like 900 or so. And for me, it's much more difficult to remove an enchantment, and my enchantments stay around a lot longer mm-hmm. than my creatures do in almost all instances. And I don't think that Tokasia's Welcome is a card that anybody's going to want to remove and go, ooh, I need that gone. He's getting too many cards. You're getting one card per turn.
Yeah. If you were getting 4 cards per cycle, maybe.
Well, in Sigarda, I will definitely be able to get 4 cards per cycle.
It might have to go in the Sigarda deck.
Yeah. But then I can remove the Welcoming Vampire mm-hmm. that replaced the Mentor of the Meek mm-hmm. in the Humans deck.
Yes.
A Humans replaced by a Vampire, which is going to be replaced by an enchantment. So we're back on theme.
Okay.
No more off-theme Humans.
Like that.
You know, so I like this card. But I will say, any deck that is running Mentor of the Meek can use Tokasia's Welcome. I appreciate that people want to stay on theme. I was just arguing with Mike the other day that I bought a Sloppity Bile Piper. This is completely off topic. Mm-hmm. That would work really well, Mike said, in my zombies deck, but it's not a zombie.
It's a demon.
And I don't want to do it because I'm like really tough mm-hmm. on this theme.
And it's not a demon you would really want to put in your demon deck. It's not something you really want to fetch.
I know. And I'm having internal struggles. Okay. Internal struggles. But this one, I have fully replaced Mentor of the Meek. I never, ever have the extra mana. And if I do, mm-hmm. I always have an ability or something I want to do instead. My commander, Sigarda, has an ability to pay 2 to exile a card from my graveyard to make a human. I always have like 2. But if I pay 1 to draw a card, I can't make the human. Then I could pay 2 to make a human and draw a card off of Tokasia's Welcome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's probably one of my favorite cards from the set.
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, I think you made a good point too about when you create tokens, this can trigger as well. It doesn't care about a non-token or a token creature. And as long as your token isn't a clone, then it's going to have mana value less than 3. So those are always going to trigger. So if you make like a 20/20 token, it's still going to draw your card. It doesn't have to be a weak creature that you make in order to activate this.
Because
it's mana value and not power. And I think that actually puts it way, way ahead of the other 2 cards.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. So that is my first card. The next one here is Brotherhood's End, which is a sorcery for 2 red-red, and it has choose one. Brotherhood's End deals 3 damage to each creature and each planeswalker, or destroy all artifacts with mana value 3 or less. So this is the most mana affordable spell that can destroy all artifacts mana value 3 or less, mm-hmm. period. Culling Ritual in green black, it's backbreaking. And every time I like reveal it or something when I'm playing my Niv-Mizzet deck, people are like, can you not? And it's like, and I get it because there are so many treasures,
sure.
So many 2 mana rocks. There's so much going on that this is really strong. And this one does mana value 3 or less. It's not even 2 or less.
Right.
And then this in red, I think, is also going to be just as backbreaking. I run Vandal Blast to destroy all artifacts. Mm-hmm. And when I'm paying 5 to overload that Vandal Blast, I'm usually destroying mana value 3 or less things. I'm not usually destroying somebody's board of 6 and 7 and 8 mana value artifacts.
Very niche cases.
Maybe if you're playing against a Duretti deck, they're doing something. But I'm not usually playing against a Duretti deck. So if there aren't any artifacts, dealing 3 to each creature is also really great. Now, we've had cards that do this before. Sweltering Suns, that has cycling. Mm-hmm. Anger of the Gods, 3 mana, it exiles things. Slagstorm can also deal 3 damage to each player. They all do 3 damage to each creature and have like a different flavor. They're all one red-red, so they all cost the same. Mm-hmm. But because this one has Destroy All Artifacts stapled onto it, this one is like leaps and bounds ahead for me because of the number of times I see somebody say, all right, Sol Ring, Signet, something pass, turn 2, this other 3 mana rock pass.
Yeah.
Oops, I Brotherhood's ended, and now you have 2 lands. And I'm not doing that to set that person back, but like that's their whole mana base.
Yeah. I mean, you are doing it to set them back.
Well, you are, but not like intentionally for one. Yeah, I didn't mean that.
Not for malicious reasons.
Yeah, not for one. Yeah, I'm not targeting one person. Right. But this is all. This hits all your opponents. It does. Not even just one.
It even hits your own, too.
It does. It does. But you know what?
It's okay.
That's okay. It's willing. It's a risk I'm willing to take.
Yeah, you have the opportunity to build around the card if you really wanted to. Your opponents don't.
Exactly. And I don't. I feel like I don't run a ton of treasure aside from decks that are just like, I have a Smothering Tide and I just make a bunch of treasure.
Sure.
I'm not running a ton. But Smothering Tithe alone is the reason that I don't want to play this. You know, you got to crack them now. You got to crack them now.
Yeah.
So I just think the sheer amount of treasure and artifact ramp is crazy. So I'll be playing this in my red decks. You know, I think Culling Ritual is another one that I always run. And this might also be if I'm in red, I might just be throwing this in.
So I resolved the Culling Ritual the other day to save myself from a Voltron player. And the one thing that I wish it had was 3 mana value instead of 2, because now this thing hits swords. The fact that this hits swords, I think, is really, really huge. 3 mana rocks too. Don't get me wrong. Those are also very
important. Yeah, I'm sorry for hitting your Chromatic Lantern, though. I really am. Like, that card is really good, and I feel bad, but I don't feel bad about
hitting Sword of Feast of Famine.
Semester's End. Yeah, Sword of Feast of Famine, Sword of all those. Sword of X. Mm-hmm. Get out of here.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right. And then my third card, I tweeted about this, and this one I got a lot of mixed reactions to. So okay. I certainly understand it. So this is Demolition Field. Demolition Field is a new land. Taps for colorless mana, just one. And then it has an ability to pay 2 and sack it. You destroy target non-basic land an opponent controls. That land's controller may search their library for a basic land and put it onto the battlefield. And then you may search for a basic land and put it onto the battlefield and shuffle. And the reason I like this so much is because it is in my opinion, for the decks that I play and the folks that I usually play against, a direct upgrade for Field of Ruin, which has taps for colorless, has an ability to pay 2 and sack it. But Field of Ruin is destroy target non-basic land and opponent controls. Each player searches their library for a basic land, puts it onto the battlefield, right? So the feedback that I got was, this is great because you're not accidentally ramping the other two players in the pod.
Sure.
Because the number of times that I've Field of Ruined, I get to replace my land by getting a basic, and I get to get rid of a Cabal Coffers or whatever it is, or an Urborg or whatever.
Yep.
But then the other two people just benefit from it,
right,
which in some games is fantastic. If you're playing a group hug deck and you want to do that, Field of Ruin over Demolition Field all the time. The other thing that I heard was that Demolition Field is a May, Field of Ruin is a force.
Correct.
And so with Field of Ruin, if somebody has used a tutor like a Fauna Shaman or a a Worldly Tutor, Fauna Shaman, no, because that one goes to hand.
Okay.
If any of the top deck tutors,
Vampiric Tutor, Worldly Tutor, Enlightened Tutor,
Mystical Tutor, if they use any of those and put something on the top of their deck, you can Field of Ruin, which forces them to go search for a basic, and then it ruins their tutor.
Yes.
I don't see, honestly, I don't see too many of those cards. And when it's being done, it's at instant speed. And I'm never, ever holding up my Field of Ruin at that time.
I don't disagree with you. I am on Team Andy for this one.
Team Demolition Field?
Team Demolition Field over Team Field of Ruin. I'm not playing Modern Mill where I'm trying to force my opponent to search so that my Mindbreak Trap will cost zero mana.
Okay, and the number of times that someone said, but Mindbreak Trap. And
I'm not playing that in Commander.
And my response was always, ooh, it's Commander.
Yeah, one, I can only play one copy of it. So what are the chances I'm going to have my one copy of Field of Ruin and my one copy of Mindbreak Trap in the same hand? And two, what, Mindbreak Trap is 20 cards? That's still only, you know, one fifth of my opponent's deck. It's not enough. I need half of their deck.
It's not enough. I need at least 40 cards to go.
I need a Lord Xander trigger to mill half.
Ooh, gross. Yeah. So I really am thinking I'm picking up a couple of foil singles of Demolition Field. Sure. I mean, the card is right now, the pre-order is 43 cents. I mean, it's not expensive. So if you're looking for a useful land and you have spots for a colorless land, which I do, I typically don't play three, four, five color decks.
Right.
In the one and two color decks, these easily replace something that you might have in there, you know?
Especially if your pod has people who, you know, go too far into the whole land thing and depend on you not to destroy their lands because it's a feel bad thing to do to your friends. No, it's okay.
It's okay.
Destroy their Cabal Coffers.
You can destroy. No. Leave the Cabal Coffers. Always destroy the Urborg.
You do whatever. It depends if there's a. most of the time.
You destroy the Urborg and then you bag everybody else. If there's an Urborg in your deck, please just don't play it out. Yeah, just don't play it out. Thank you. What do you have this week?
All right. Well, we just talked about some lands. So how about we talk about something that can tutor some lands? At least that's one of the things I will be using on this card literally every time I cast it.
Okay.
And that is Titania's Command. So for four green, you get a sorcery that allows you to choose two. You can exile target player's graveyard. You gain one life for each card exiled this way. You can search your library for up to two land cards, put them on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. You can create two green bear creature tokens, or you can put two +1/+1 counters on each creature you control. So this one really should read, search your library for two lands, put them on the battlefield tapped, and then choose one of these other.
Okay, got it. It is
absolutely the main reason why I'm picking this. This is another Hour of Promise, which is a 5-mana green sorcery that allows you to search for two lands, comes on the battlefield tapped. If you control three or more deserts after that, you get zombies. So that's like the...
And it almost never triggers for anyone except the new Hazazon deck, which is really neat that I can do that now. But a 5-mana ramp for two lands, and it's not two basics. It's just two lands.
That's right.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
It's but you're almost again unless you're in Hazazon, you're never going to get the zombies unless you have to control a desert ahead of time. There's a build restriction around it. It's not something that you want, so you're just getting the two lands for it. So for one extra mana, you're not only getting those two lands, but you're also getting an added effect. You're either gaining a ton of life and screwing someone's graveyard over by exiling it. You make a couple blockers. Maybe that's the last one you want to choose, or you pump your entire board.
You know what's funny? I actually think it might be depending on the way you build the deck, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're putting it. If you're in green, you probably have some creatures, I guess. But yeah. I feel like my least chosen mode for this, just thinking about this on paper, is that I'd probably not choose to put 2+1/+1 counters on each creature you control. I'd probably want blockers or to exile a graveyard, but I also am always be ramping unless it's like turn 12. I'm probably not ramping.
I would say that there are niche scenarios, and as soon as you said something, the first thing I thought of was, what if I have an Avenger of Zendikar out with 8 plant tokens? Then I want to get two lands. Hopefully they're the new Capenna lands that auto sack themselves to go grab basics. Ooh. And get another 2+1/+1 counters. But again, that might be a niche case. We're going to do this to grab two lands. We're grabbing Urborg and Cabal Coffers, and hopefully we're untapping and we're going to
win. Okay, so we're in green, black, solid. At least. Golgari. Mm-hmm. It's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this one. The command's cool. The art's also really good.
It's very nice. And Titania, blow us out of the water with... Well, I'm going to read this artist's name real quick. Dominic Mayer. Thank you so much for your beautiful artwork. And that's Titania's Command. So I'm going to be putting that in pretty much all of my green decks, especially my green 3-color decks, which are a few.
Getting to 6 mana is not difficult in green. No, so.
And not at all. Not at all. So let's talk about
another 6-mana card.
A mono black combo card, though. This is Disciples of Gix. This is an uncommon for 4BB. You get a 4/4 Phyrexian human. Humans for any of you human lovers out there. When Disciples of Gix enters the battlefield, you get to search your library for up to 3 artifact cards, put them into your graveyard, and then shuffle. So this is a creature that basically has a pseudo buried alive type effect. Buried alive is a sorcery that allows you to search your library for three cards and put them into your graveyard. This one obviously only allows you to search for artifacts, but it does work really well if you have an artifact graveyard theme deck. Again, we just saw the Necron pre-con. It was all about graveyard, artifact, creatures, and unearth. So you could probably just slot this into your Necron deck and upgrade it. I have a Cedrus the Traitor King deck that combos off with Trazen the Infinite, which was printed in the Necron pre-con deck. Trazen has all the activated abilities of artifacts in your graveyard. So even with Cedrus, I was planning on using Buried Alive to bury three artifacts, including Trazen. So just to have a backup Buried Alive, on top of the fact it's on an ETB for a creature, so you can like kill it, bring it back. I mean, in a Cedrus deck, it has Unearth because you own a Cedrus, so you'll be able to get the trigger more than once. And even if you can keep looping it and stuff and put artifacts into your graveyard, I know the other day I actually died to a Mirrodin Besieged, which is an enchantment that says at your end step, you get to draw and mill cards. If you choose the Phyrexian type as it enters the battlefield, at the beginning of your end step, draw a card, then discard a card. Then if there are 15 or more artifact cards in your graveyard, target opponent loses the game. So this could be a really good way to fuel that particular win con. Or if you want to just do basic value, Phyrexian Triniform has Encore for 12 from your graveyard to get a bunch of 9/9s that when they die become 3/3/3s. Biotransference and Mycosynth Lattice can turn a bunch of your stuff into artifacts that weren't artifacts before to allow you to search for anything that you want. This is 6 mana, but I think it's 6 mana for a reason because it combos really, really well. And I like this card a lot.
Yeah, this wasn't on my radar at all. It makes sense for what you would like to use it for.
Mm-hmm.
I usually see a mono black card and then also very expensive and then just like a 4/4 and a weird creature type. And I go, This isn't for me. It's not calling to me, but this makes sense and I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's a human. I haven't looked to see if it fits in my black white humans deck. I don't think it does, but I should consider
it. I also don't
run
a ton of artifacts either, but I feel like this would fit really well into any generic Esper artifact deck.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're holding like an Eternal Witness or something, maybe you're an Abzan or something, and you have some sort of graveyard just to get an artifact back to your hand, consider it a two-step process to tutor an artifact to your hand.
I like it.
Okay, so my last card on this list is another uncommon, but it's a human, and I think it's a human we're both going to really love, and that's Recruitment Officer. Recruitment Officer for 1W, you get a human soldier 2/1, where you can pay 3W to look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with mana value 3 or less from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So this is a human that's going to be searching for other humans. Well, maybe it's other humans. It's going to be any other creature mana value 3 or less. You're looking at a little bit less cards. I wanted to compare this to Duskwatch Recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
I know for you in particular, Andy, you play green-white humans, so you might have the opportunity to play both of these. And Duskwatch Recruiter, for 1 and a green, you get a 2/2 where you pay 2 and a green to look at the top 3 cards of your library, and you can reveal a creature and put it into your hand. So there's no limitation on the mana value that the creature has to be, although you do get to search through one less card. But it also costs 1 less mana for the Duskwatch Recruiter. So these cards are actually very similar. I don't know if maybe balanced is the right word between the two of them. But I don't know. Have you considered running this in your humans deck?
You know what's funny? I haven't. And I cut the Duskwatch Recruiter from my humans deck. And I did that a while ago only because I was like, I never wanted to keep up that mana.
Sure.
I always wanted to have the mana available to activate my commander just to get a 1/1 because I'm running cards like the Crusade card, the
Cather's Crusade.
Cather's Crusade. That's thank you. One. Yeah, whenever a creature enters, you put a counter on it. So it was like I always wanted to do other things.
Sure.
But there's absolutely a home for Duskwatch Recruiter and Recruitment Officer. And I do appreciate that you look through my deck to figure out how many cards this would actually hit, because this would hit 19. You said this hits 19 cards in one of your decks, but hits 24 cards in my current green white humans deck.
It does.
The Duskwatch Recruiter usually gave me a card or two,
mm-hmm.
but it was setting me back by paying the mana.
That's
fair. To just draw cards. So I said, you know what? Screw it. Let's just make a bunch of creatures and then next turn play a Shamanic Revelation and revel in the 12 cards I have now. Instead of paying 3 to get 1, I'll pay 5 to get like 12 maybe or something. But it requires a different board state. I get it.
Now, did you ever have Dustwatch Recruiter flip on you? Because it is a werewolf and it doesn't have the activated ability on the other side, but it does make your creature spells cost less.
Yeah, I have very rarely though. I can barely in my werewolf deck might get my stupid werewolves just to flip because people are like, I'm always going to play a stinking spell. And it's like, could someone just not like one turn? Could someone just not? Not very often. I would say almost every turn, someone is always casting a spell now. Okay. And I should probably track that. Okay. When I play my werewolf deck, so maybe I'll have a card that says how many times do turns go by and everybody casts a spell so werewolves don't transform?
Yeah. That would be cool to see.
Where I need them to actively not be bad humans anymore and be a cool werewolf.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And I wonder how many times they would flip back because Tovalar flips both. It at your upkeep.
Yeah.
If you have three or more.
Every time Tovalar flips, you put a T next to that flip. And that was a Tovalar flip. So it was a force flip.
I just have two columns. One says Tovalar flip, and then one is like everybody else.
Yeah.
Making me. But see, I'd have to have three columns. One's flip to werewolf, one's flip back to werewolf.
Yes.
So how many times did they flip back? Because someone cast two spells? You know, it's a lot of work. But I do like these, and I like these cards if you have a mana sink.
Yes.
You can just draw cards. If you can find a way to make infinite mana, go to town.
I will say Recruitment Officer is set up as a mono white card to be probably in decks more likely to be running cards like Training Grounds, Zerta the Dawn Waker, and Hearthstone, which reduce the amount of mana for activated abilities that you cost. So maybe you can get it down to the same cost as Dustwatch Recruiter, and it'll be a useful spell. I know my Jeskai Flicker deck is where I can hit 19 cards, and that's where I run all of those particular cards for ability reduction. So it's definitely an include for me in that one.
Yeah. Let's talk about some combos.
Combos.
CommanderSpellbook.com. Coming in with more combos. So we're going to talk about just a couple of cards from the main set. There's a lot of combos, though, if you're looking at cards from the Brothers War precons.
Holy moly.
Oh, my gosh. There are so many of them.
Power.
Let's start out, though, with, an infinite turn combo.
Sure.
It's fine. It's really cool. So Ugin's Nexus is the old card. 5 colorless mana. 5 generic mana. For a legendary artifact that says if a player would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. Get wrecked, you nasty extra turns players, as I say the combo that is doing exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also says if Ugin's Nexus will be put into a graveyard from the battlefield, exile instead and take an extra turn. So no. I will take an extra turn here.
That's
mine. This pairs with Drafna, founder of Latinam, a 2/1 human artificer advisor. Another advisor.
Ooh,
I like that.
Advisor tribal.
And it costs 1 and a blue. So very affordable mana value here. And it has 2 abilities. Pay 1 and a blue, return target artifact you control to its owner's hand, and pay 3 generic, tap it, copy target artifact spell you control. So this one's really super duper easy to do. It requires a lot of mana. So mm-hmm. you just need to have Drafna on the battlefield. It's your commander. It's going to make it to the battlefield. Okay. You're just going to play it.
Yep.
I promise you, you will do it. And then Ugin's Nexus just needs to be in your hand and you need to have 10 mana available. And then Drafna can't have Summoning Sickness. And I assume by the time you have 10 mana, you will have cast Drafna and an upkeep will have happened.
We'll see.
So,
Drafna costs 8. People keep removing it.
Stop removing Drafna. Okay. So all you're going to do here is you're going to play Ugin's Nexus for 5 mana. While it's on the stack, you're going to activate Drafna's ability to copy target artifact spell you control. You allow both of the Ugin's Nexus spells to resolve, and due to the legend rule, you have to sack one of them. So the token that you made, the copied version, you sacrifice that, which then puts the Ugin's Nexus trigger onto the battle onto the stack that says, if this would be put into a graveyard from the battlefield, exile and take an extra turn. So now you have an extra turn, and you pay 1 and a blue and return that original Ugin's Nexus from the battlefield back to your hand. So now you are taking infinite turns because you're going to play the Ugin's Nexus, copy it, sack it, take a turn, and return it back to your hand. Each of those turns, you're going to be drawing a card. So you're going to eventually draw all your lands, right? And then this is a very easy way to say, I win with Jace's, Jace, the wielder of mysteries, or a Thassa's Oracle, or mm-hmm. a
Laboratory
Maniac. Those types of effects where you would win if you just draw out your deck. This is a very easy one. You don't actually have to explain very much. If your opponents say, well, what's the combo? How do you do it? You just say, unless you have a way to stop my infinite turns here, mm-hmm. I'm just going to do it until I naturally just draw it.
Yep.
And then we'll go from there. I think it's really cool. And Ugin's Nexus continues to be a very neat combo card.
Yeah, I'm happy I bought it when I did my Ozgear upgrade, because I feel like this card, it's going to keep going up in price now.
I think it's still just single printing from Khans of Tarkir. Mm-hmm. And I did submit this combo.
Oh,
I did confirm in our Discord with a judge. I said, this is how this works, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah. So I submitted it. So this is on the website. You are welcome.
Perfect. Thanks, Andy. Thanks for taking infinite turns.
Oh, you are so welcome.
In response, I would like to mill your entire library.
Ooh, see, that you wanted to mill a lot earlier, yeah. Right? That's why we don't play Mindbreak Trap. So call That's back. True. So what are you milling and what are you milling with?
All right, so brand new card from Brothers War. We are talking about Teressian Mindbreaker. This is a 6/4 artifact creature juggernaut that says whenever Teressian Mindbreaker attacks, defending player mills half their library rounded up. In combination with either the creature Bruvac the Grandiloquent, a 1/4 that says if an opponent would mill one or more cards, they mill twice that many cards instead, or the enchantment Fraying Sanity for 2 and a blue. You get an aura curse that says enchant player. At the beginning of each end step, enchanted player puts the top X cards of their library into their graveyard, where X is the number of cards put into the graveyard from anywhere this turn. You will be able to mill out all of your opponents. So by having both of the permanents on the battlefield, with Teressian Mindbreaker not having Summoning Sickness and swinging with the Mindbreaker, you will simply mill someone for their entire deck.
We've seen, obviously, a lot. Actually, I think every time that we do a set review, if Bruvac works with a mill thing, mm-hmm. we always include it. Bruvac is becoming a very, like, and I haven't played against one in a long time. Mm-hmm. We have had one on stream. It's been a very long time. Bruvac is becoming one of those commanders where it and, like, one other card, but there's, like, 12 of those cards now. Yeah. Just wins. So if you're looking for a mill commander, I really like this one, but I understand like Lord Xander decks another way, you mm-hmm. know, because then you get more colors, but this is really good.
Yeah, I like the added part of this could pseudo come out of nowhere, because Teressian Mindbreaker also has Unearth. So for one
mill it yourself and yeah. then unearth it.
And then unearth it. Now it exiles at the end of combat. So you're only gonna be able to do it to one player, but with Fraying Sanity, you're only gonna be able to do it to one player anyways. And then right. the player dies and it goes away. So being able to, for just 4 mana, get the thing out that's gonna mill an opponent half their library. It's an attack trigger, not a damage trigger, so you don't even have to get through. I like this combo.
Yeah, that one's very good. And I added one here that works with a card we just talked about recently, which is Maze's End. So there's a combo here with Root, Path Purifier, Maze's End, and New Frontiers. So real quick refresher, Maze's End, it's an alternate win con that cares about gates. It taps for a colorless mana, enters tapped, and you can pay 3, return it to your hand. Search for a gate, put it onto the battlefield. If you control 10 or more gates with different names, you win the game. So alternate win condition, very cool. The new card here is Root, Path Purifier, a 3/4 elf druid for 3 and a green that says lands you control and lands in your library are basic.
Mm.
So there you can, if you're using a card to search for any land or search for just basic cultivate. Lands, you can grab anything, cultivate, Kadama's Reach, you got them all. So you can grab whatever land you want. The other card here is New Frontiers. So it's a sorcery speed spell that says each player may search their library for up to X basic lands and put them into play tapped. Then each player who searched the library shuffles it, and it costs X and green. So all you have to do is have Root, Path Purifier on the battlefield. Maze's End has to be obviously out as well and be able to activate. And then you need to have at least 10 gates with different names in your library or on the battlefield under your control. And I love how this mana cost is written for this, because it costs 12 generic and green available, mm-hmm. minus 1 for each unique gate you already control. Because okay, if you don't true. Have 10, if you need to go get all 10 gates, then it's going to cost you 13.
Mm-hmm.
If you already have 5 gates, this is going to cost you 13 minus 5. Obviously, one of those has to be green. So what you're going to do is you're going to cast New Horizons for whatever it is, the number of gates you need to get until you have enough that you can activate Maze's End. So you just need to get 9 gates.
Mm-hmm.
You resolve that, you search for all those gates, and you activate Maze's End, and you have 10 gates now. And and you win the game. And I think this is interesting because this is mono green, which obviously works in the five color gates decks, but also works in the Sultai gates deck.
Yes.
As a probably what I would refer to as a very unique combo that you're not going to see often. Mm-hmm. Is it always going to work? Absolutely not. Because someone's probably going to remove that Root Path Purifier.
Yes.
And it's also a sorcery speed New Frontier spell, but it requires quite a bit of mana. It's really cool.
Yeah, I just quickly looked up because I wasn't sure how much mana Reshape the Earth was, which is a card we talked about that can just search for 10 lands and put them on the battlefield. That one costs 9 and then plus 3 for Maze's End. So they cost 12 in total for the Reshape the Earth combo.
But Reshape the Earth puts it in tap though, right? So you already need to have Maze's End.
You do already have, but
out. But you can get the 10 gates with Maze's End already out because the Maze's End needs to be out for this one too.
Right.
So one mana extra. Yeah, one mana extra. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of Maze's End combos. Oh, if you're looking at, if you want to, you know, call it a Maze's End episode, if you want to look up some, Commander's Public has a lot of Maze's End combos. Mm-hmm. This one just uses Root Path Purifier, which I thought was just the neatest.
It is. And I can't wait to put that in all of my decks.
I don't know how, I mean, I'm searching very often for, I mean, I'm running Cultivate and Kodama's Reach. So yeah, Root Path Purifier is just, I think, a very good card for what I'm doing, you know, usually if I'm running green.
Sure.
You know,
I mean, I'm just thinking of like Harvest Season in my tokens deck after I swing with 10 creatures or something and go grabbing Field of the Dead. And then what other 9 lands that I want? I think the upside is insane. Maybe the downside is really low, though. Maybe it's got really low floor and a really high ceiling.
Yeah.
I like the
low floor, high ceiling. It doesn't have a high floor, though.
It doesn't have a high floor. Like, if you don't have a way of searching basics. But then again, like with Evolving Wilds, it's really good, right? It's the ones that it doesn't work with have to say search for anything with a basic land type, not a basic land. Because your lands don't automatically get like island, mountain.
Yeah, if forest. It says like search your library for a forest, that's not just any basic, that's specifically a forest.
Right.
But commanders that we would build. Mike, you actually put together a brew and you've been playtesting it for Queen Caleb and Krug.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Queen Caleb and Krug is a Boros commander. And Boros is usually not my shin dig.
Although your Oscar deck shows up quite a bit, and it's very good, and I do like that one.
I like that one too.
But that's Lorehold. Yeah. That's not Boros.
That's true.
That's Lorehold.
This one's probably not Boros. This was long before Boros existed, I imagine. But I guess I don't know for sure how old Ravnica
is. We're messing with the timeline in the story, so who knows? Maybe it's after. Maybe it's before.
Boros is now called Bin Krug Guild because Queen Caleb started it.
Yes.
Queen Caleb and Krug for 3 mana, 1 a red and a white. You get a 2/3 human noble with just one simple activated ability. For 4 generic mana, you can tap it to discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards. You may choose an artifact or creature card with mana value 1 you discarded this way, then do the same for artifact or creature cards with mana values 2 and 3. Return those cards to the battlefield, activate only as a sorcery. So for 4 mana, we are wheeling ourselves, and amongst the cards that we discard, we can pick a 1, 2, and 3 mana value creature or artifact and put them onto the battlefield. So the deck is mainly built around untapping Queen Kayla with some artifacts. Like there is a Saddlebags artifact. There a lot of these artifacts that do untapping do specifically look at artifacts to untap, but the ones that look at humans are like Jandor's Saddlebags, a 2 generic mana for you pay 3 generic mana to tap it to untap a target creature. So those are the main types of artifacts. We're playing Halo Fountain I have in here too, because it can pay 1 to untap. Puppet Strings pay 2 to untap. Patriarch Seal, brand new from Commander Legends Baldur's Gate, can untap a target legendary creature you control. So the idea is to try to activate my queen, Kayla, as many times as possible in a single turn. You have to run a lot of mana rocks. Most of your mana rocks are going to be at 2 and 3. There's not a ton of choices at 1. From goldfishing this, you might want to think that you always want to hit 3, 2, 1. The most important thing that you want to hit is 3 and 2. Don't worry about 1. Search for Sensei's Divining Top. It is the most insane card in the world. And Queen Kayla, you can rearrange the top 3 cards of your library, put Sensei's on top, always draw Sensei's before you activate your Queen Kayla, and always put Sensei's on the battlefield for free. but your main win conditions, because you have to win the
game. How are we going to win? What are we going to win with?
So we play a lot of artifacts in here. So we're going to have like Reckless Fireweaver in here. Whenever an artifact enters the battlefield, you get to deal one damage to each one of your opponents. We're only doing three artifacts every time we activate Queen Kayla. But Ingenious Artillerist is doing something very similar, common from Baldur's Gate. For two in a red, you get a 3/1 human artificer. This is whenever one or more artifacts enter the battlefield under your control, the artillery deals that much damage to each opponent. So if you have three enter, it deals three damage to each opponent. But the thing that's killing everybody is a card you play in one of your CEDH decks to kill everybody. And that is Glinthorn Buccaneer. Every time you discard a card, you get to deal one damage. So I'm going to constantly be discarding seven cards at a time, or more than that. A lot of these artifacts that I'm playing are simply entering the battlefield and drawing me an additional card, so I have more cards to wield on my next turn. So that's the main way to win. Some backup conditions of some flyers. I mean, Psychosis Crawler is also dealing damage when I'm drawing, but it's also going to be very big when I have a big hand size. But yeah, incremental damage, a little bit of combat. If someone does go infinite life, I do think I'm screwed.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. That's
I don't have alternate win cons or anything like that in here. No mill. It does look a lot like my Ozgear deck. It's a red-white, cares about activated abilities and artifacts deck.
So. Yeah. So the deck that I would build.
Yes.
Was a card that we already talked about.
Okay.
Which was Drafna, Founder of Latinam.
That's a good one.
So Drafna is it's just an extra turns deck. The win cons, now you talk about your win cons. My win cons is losing all my friends.
Unfortunately,
no one wants to play against that type of deck, but I haven't had one in a long time. The last time I used my extra turns deck, because it was just, I have all the extra turns cards, was I had a Maloku, the Clouded Mirror deck, which was very cool. You could return lands and you could utilize things to get your extra turn spells back from the graveyard to the top of your library. And it was cool. But it was one of those like kind of flash in the pan decks where it's like you play it five or six times, you win once or twice. And that, you know, it does the same thing. And before that, it had been Baral, Chief of Compliance. At some point after that, I used to have an Orvar deck that was in mono blue that I don't run anymore, because it did its thing too well, although that one wasn't extra turns. Because I had so many variants of a mono blue deck, I have all the cards to make the deck.
Right.
Without having to buy them.
Right.
Which I think is one of the reasons why I was drawn to Drafna. It's like, wait, I could take the shell and maybe add a few other cool artifacts, right? Because it doesn't have to be Ugin's Nexus. It could be any cool artifact spell that I want to put out
there. Two Soul Rings. I mean, it's kind of boring, but
you know, I two basalt monoliths. Mesmeric orbs,
two of them. And then return it to your hand, and then copy it again. Return it to your hand and copy it again.
Yeah,
okay.
See, this I'm is in. Mesmeric orb, but
Ugin's
not...
Nexus out. Mesmeric orb.
All my friends hate Ugin's Nexus. We all love Mesmeric orb.
That's right.
Yeah, so I do think it's probably going to be a flash pan deck. If you're in the Discord, you'll probably see it a few times. I definitely will. I think this one will be I will put it together. And I love monocolor decks.
Sure. It's cool.
They're affordable to put together. And this one, I don't think will cost me that much money. So those are the decks that we would build the set. And I can't believe that was it for this set. It was just a little set review.
Just a little. I mean, like we talked about, there's a lot of power in the commander precons. Honestly, most of my deck brewing, I've already brewed three different lists for the Ashnod from the Mishra precon. Ashnod, the uncaring that cares about sacrificing things. You get double triggers from sacrificing. I have a goblins deck, a zombies deck, and a generic sacrifice deck, all from that Ashnod, the uncaring. But, you know, there's also a bunch of legendary creatures that we didn't talk about that we talked about potentially building decks for. People have been talking about Gix, Yawgmoth Praetor.
Okay, but that card is like mono black. Edrix Bymaster of Trest is how it makes me feel because it's like, don't attack me. You know, you draw. You can have a little card draw and a little life loss. It's fine. Don't swing at me.
Yeah, I would say like low mana value black creatures are probably the second most evasive next to blue. You could consider white because it gets flying easily, but. Like with your shadow abilities and all that kind of stuff from olden days to get in and do that damage and draw some
I think
cards.
I'm going to see quite a few Gix decks.
I
if yeah. I had to, if I had to put money on which of the commanders, the legendary creatures from the set, are going to be the most built, I would say Caleb and Krug. I do not think Draphna is going to be up there, but I do think Gix will be up there because, one, it's Gix. We finally got a Gix, but it's also just very good for Commander.
I think we're going to see a lot of Urza's and a lot of Mishra's meld card.
That's decks. Cool.
It's very cool. I like the Mishra one more.
Titania is cool.
Titania is very cool. We'll definitely see Titania. I like this Samwell Avenger Ace who looks like on the face he cares about vehicles, but really only cares about being tapped and cares about artifacts and mono white. So I hope I get to see someone build that particular deck. Myrel, Shield of Argive, was a card that was spoiled and no one knew if it was real or not.
Turns out it wasn't. It's not a 2/2 for white white.
No,
it costs more, but that card's really good.
It's appropriately cost. It's very good.
Yeah, very good card. So we're excited about this set. Buying singles. I'm doing it. I'm buying the singles this time. So I will be pre-ordering those. Very excited to get my Demolition Fields. Mm-hmm. Land Destruction coming to a game near you. Mike, sorry, you play a lot of games with me, so there will be more Land Destruction.
Yeah, hey, take out my Field of the Dead. I just need to run more Graveyard Recursion.
Exactly. That's what you're learning. And that's going to be it for this week. But everybody who's traveling to MTG Summit, the MTG Summit this weekend, have a great time.
Yes, and to everyone who is traveling out to a pre-release for Brothers War and everything, you have a great time.
That's a lot happening this weekend. I can't make it. I can't make it to a pre-release. We're
doing the same thing on Friday together. Mm-hmm. Going to a concert, and then I don't know if I have anything going on Saturday or Sunday.
I'll definitely pick up a pre-release kit. I do like playing with those at home, and I also just like cracking packs. Yeah.
I mean, I've got fun. I have set booster boxes coming, so I'm gonna crack at least one box of set boosters, but there are 46 singles that I want to buy from this set.
Yeah,
Commander deck. So
well, everybody, if you want to chat with us more, I'm on Twitter at Andy Florey,
and I'm on Twitter at Wormcoil Engine. And of course, we hope to hear, we will hear from you. We will
What is
Talk
happening?
Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Sorry, had a stroke there at the end.